The book of Ruth, starting in chapter 1, verse 1. It says, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to the country of Moab and remained there." So in these two verses, we're giving the time and the place of our story. It is during the time of the judges. That's, you know, when Joshua came and led the people into the land. And there was no king. There was no central leadership in Israel. And it was not the best of times. And the Lord raised up judges who were basically military leaders, helped fight off certain other invading nations, but also helped rule in some limited capacity. And so you had a period of time in which you had judges ruling in Israel up until when we had our first king. They had their first king, King Saul. So this story is between the time of, sometime between the time of Joshua and the time of the kings. And if you want to date, probably around 1200 BC. So over 3,000 years ago. The place, Bethlehem. Bethlehem in Judah. Same city that King David would be born in a few years later, and the same city that our Lord Jesus would be born in over a millennium later. And sadly, there's a famine. And so you have a man named Elimelech, and he takes his wife, Naomi, and their two sons, and they move to Moab. Moab was just east of Israel. Moab did not have the best reputation in the world. If you remember, the father of the Moabites, Moab, was the child of Lot when his daughter got him drunk and slept with him, and they had Moab. And now you have the Moabites. The Moabites did not have the best relationship with the Israelites. At the time when they were in the wilderness for the 40 years, the Moabites trying to destroy, get rid of Israel because they didn't like them roaming around near their land. First they tried attacking them or cursing them, but that didn't work. And so they sent Moabite women into the Israelite camp to try and seduce the men. And it was a whole big mess. The Lord sent a plague that killed like 24,000 people. So Moabites are not... You know, you try not to have too much to do with the Moabites if you're an Israelite. But this is desperate times. This man can't feed his family, so he takes them and they move to Moab. All right, that's where we are. Verse 3. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left and her two sons. So just like that, no warning, no details. We don't know why. Tragedy hits the family. And now Naomi is a widow. But at least she has the two sons to take care of her and provide for her. Verse 5. Now they, her two sons, verse 4, I'm sorry. They took wives of the women of Moab. The name of one was Orpah and the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband. So tragedy hits again. After losing her husband, she loses both of her sons. So any security, any providers that she had, they're gone. And she's left with two daughters-in-law, Moabite women. And as we will see, they're both childless. And so she doesn't have children. She doesn't have a husband. She doesn't have grandchildren. Nothing. That's the end of the family. Right there. This is the end of the family. All Israelites were hoping to have children and perhaps their child would be the Messiah, especially if you're from Judah, because you know that the Messiah was going to come from Judah. And so everyone was hoping that the family would go on and the Messiah would come through them. The biggest tragedy would be no children, and that's it, that's the end. And that is what has happened to Naomi. No, everyone has died. Verse 6. Then she, that's Naomi, arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. So here we have the first mention of the Lord in the book, and the Lord has given us some hope. He has given food back in Bethlehem. The famine is finished. So she's like, okay, I'm going to go back there. She must have some kind of extended family there. Maybe someone will be able to help. So she's going back to Bethlehem. Verse 7. I'm just messing up the numbers. Therefore, she went out from the place where she was and her two daughters-in-law with her. And they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said her two daughters-in-law, go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. So you have three women, three widows. They've gone through a lot together. And Naomi says, you know what? There's no point in you coming with me. Just go back to Moab. Stay in Moab. Find husbands there. Go back to your families. Just make a life for yourselves here. I'm going to go by myself. Maybe Naomi, like I said, has relatives back in Bethlehem, but what are these girls going to do there? So she says, please just stay here. I'm going to go by myself. And they hug, and they kiss, and they cry, and they're ready to split up. And then verse 10, it says, and they said to her, surely we will return with you to your people. They're like, no, we'll go with you. And so Naomi is going to give an argument why they should not come with her. And it's this, verse 11. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters, go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Now, what's going on here? In ancient Israel, if a married man died and his wife had had no children, then it was law, custom, that his brother should marry the widow, take care of her, have children with her, and the first child that he had with her would actually get the inheritance of the man who died. All right? The rest of the kids would get his inheritance. But all right, so this is what's going on here. And the point is that she is saying, look, I'm not going to have any more children. I don't have any. Even if I'm too old to have children, I'm too old to get married now. Even if I were married and had children today, what are you going to do? You're just going to wait around years until these supposed sons are going to grow up and then you can marry them? It's not going to happen, okay? I can't help you. There's nothing I can do for you. I can't provide husbands for you. Just go back to Moab and find husbands for yourselves there. Verse 14. Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. It's an interesting word there where it says she clung to her. It's the same word that you find in Genesis 2, that a man shall leave his father and his wife and cleave or cling to his wife. So she's clinging to her mother-in-law. She's like, no, 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 I'm not going. Orpah can leave, but I'm not leaving. Verse 15. Naomi says, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. And she, then Ruth said, entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. I was reading that, and I was like, I know those are words of a daughter-in-law to a mother-in-law, but those would be great marriage vows right there. I am not leaving. Wherever you go, I'm going. Nothing will separate us but death. So Ruth, at this point, makes a decision. And she says, this is it. She is leaving her country. She is leaving her family. She is changing her religion. She's leaving her gods. She's probably thinking she may have to remain a widow and without children for the rest of her life, but she doesn't care. I'm going with you. I will not leave you. Verse 18, when she, Naomi, saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. And that it sounds kind of bad in that translation. It sounds like, well, I'm not speaking to you anymore. No, it's simply, she stopped arguing. She stopped. She was like, all right, that's fine. I know I can't convince you to go back, so all right. Verse 19, now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. And it happened, when they had come to Bethlehem, that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? So they haven't seen her in a long time, over 10 years. And so they recognize her, and they're like, hey, it's Naomi. And verse 20, but she said to them, do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. What does Naomi mean? Naomi means pleasant or lovely. Mara means bitter. So everyone is like, hey, pleasant, how are you? And she's like, don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter, because the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. Verse 21, I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me pleasant, Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. So they're back in Bethlehem, time of the barley harvest, and they have nothing. They have nothing. They have no food. They have no family. Nothing. And it's at this point that the author of Ruth decides to introduce us to a gentleman named Boaz. Next verse, chapter 2, verse 1. It says, there was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. And after he throws that out, he just goes back to talking about Naomi and Ruth again. So it's just kind of a blurb right there. We're still talking about Naomi and Ruth, but hey, you know, there's this guy, his name is Boaz. But let's keep on talking about Ruth and Naomi. Verse 2. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I might find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. Now, in ancient Israel, the Lord had made a way to provide for poor people. And so when there was a harvest, the law said that you shouldn't harvest everything. Don't pick all the fruit, all the grain. Leave bits so that the poor people can come and gather bits and pieces so they have something to eat. That was a provision in the law. So Ruth says, I'm going to go see if I can find someone who shows favor to me, someone who lets me glean in their field, and I'm going to try and get bits and pieces so we can eat. So Naomi says, okay, good idea, go. Verse 3, then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. She just happened to be in the field of Boaz. Just what a coincidence. Is this luck? Is this chance? This whole book, things just kind of... If you saw this in a movie, you'd be like, no way that can happen. Everything is just fitting just right. Is that luck? No, it's the Lord who works all things for the good of those who love Him and works all things for His glory. And so she is gleaning in Boaz's field, and wouldn't you know it, as luck would have it, guess who shows up? Verse 4. Now behold, it says, like, behold, look at this. Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, whose young girl is this? Who's this girl walking around in my field? Verse 6. So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, it is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house. So Boaz is like, all right. He's been told who she is, and he immediately heads on out to find her and talk to her. Verse 8. Then Boaz, apparently he goes and finds Ruth, and he said to Ruth, you will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn. So he says, don't go anywhere. Stay right here. I have talked to everyone. You know, you can be with the rest of the girls who are gleaning. You can. I've told the men not to touch you. He's making sure no one bothers her, no one harms her. If you're thirsty, go ask for water. They'll give it to you. Stay here. Amazing. Verse 10. So she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner? Why are you being so good to me? And Boaz answered and said to her, it has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and have come to people whom you did not know before. Now listen to this verse. May the Lord repay your work and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. May the Lord repay your work and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. Verse 13, then she said, let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, even though I'm not like one of your maidservants. She's basically saying, thank you for treating me so well, even though I'm not even like your maidservants. I'm like at the bottom of the social ladder right there. So a little time passes, and we get to verse 14. Now, Boaz said to her at mealtime, come here and eat of the bread, and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied, and kept some back. So it's mealtime, and he invites her, come eat with me. Here you have the master of the house, the master of the fields, and he invites her to come sit at his table, and he serves her, and she's eating, and she's full. In fact, there's enough where she just kind of takes some and keeps it on the side. Someone is interested in someone here. Verse 15. And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. Also, let grain from the bundles fall purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her." So he says to his workers, he says, go and, you know, every now and then just kind of drop something. Just drop something and just leave it there for her to pick her up. So it's not just little bits and pieces that she's picking. She's picking up chunks, right? So he wants to make sure that she doesn't go hungry. Verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. Now, that doesn't mean a lot to us. What's an ephah? Well, apparently, I don't know, I have to check it out. An ephah is about 15 kilos. That's about over 30 pounds. So that's a lot. And she's going to carry this home, so she's got to be pretty solid to do this. This is a lot. This is not bits and pieces. This is a lot of grain. All right? Verse 18, then she took it up, oh, there she goes, and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. So she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back off, what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. So I'm sure Naomi is waiting for Ruth to come back with a handful of grain where they can like make a loaf of bread or something. And she shows up with 15 kilos of grain and some extra food that she had kept to give to her to eat. Verse 19. And her mother said, and her mother-in-law said to her, "Where have you gleaned today? Where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you." All right, what is going on? And it's important here. It's important here to realize. Ruth, even though she knows very well where she gleaned and who the master of that field was, she doesn't know the significance of it. She doesn't know who Boaz is. Naomi, on the other hand, she knows very well who Boaz is, but she doesn't know that Ruth has been gleaning in Boaz's field. Right? She's like, who? Where did you get all this stuff? Who has been so good to you? Where did you go? In the middle of verse 19, so she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." You picture now Naomi going, okay. Verse 20, then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead." And Naomi said to her, "This man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives." Now, when you read that in this translation, where it says, "he is one of our close relatives," it doesn't sound like much. Okay, he's a close relative. Other translations say this man is a kinsman redeemer. It's a technical term. It's one word in the Hebrew. But this close relative or kinsman redeemer, it's a technical term. It means something very specific. It doesn't just mean someone that I'm related to. All right, well, what does it mean? A kinsman redeemer or close relative was a person, family, who had certain duties toward the extended family. Okay? For example, let's assume that you were poor and in order to survive you sold your land. Well, the kinsman redeemer, or the close relative, if he was financially able, would try and come and buy that land back. He would redeem that land. He would pay the price for the land so that the land could remain in your name or remain in the family. So it wouldn't go to strangers, because it was very important to pass on the land to your children. Another example, if a person was in enormous debt and had to sell himself into slavery, a kinsman redeemer, this close relative, if he was financially able, would go and redeem the person and pay the price so that he wouldn't have to go and become a slave. All right? These are some of the examples of what a kinsman redeemer did. And it seems that at this time in Israel, that the law that I mentioned previously, the law where I said that if a man dies and he doesn't have any children, then his brother has to marry the widow and take care of her and provide an heir for the inheritance and all those things. It seems that they had also connected that law with the kinsman redeemer. So this close relative would have to marry the person so it provide an heir so that the inheritance would go to that child and so forth. All right? And so in keeping all that in mind and what this close relative or a kinsman redeemer is, here you have Ruth and Naomi, and Ruth just said, well, this guy's name is Boaz, who's been really kind to me, who's given us all this food, he's a really nice guy. And Naomi says, oh, this guy is a kinsman redeemer. This guy is a close relative. This is a guy who could perform certain duties to help us out. Okay? There's a number of things that he could do. Now, the reason that I say this man could perform some duties to help us out is that these laws or customs, you couldn't force a person to do this. You couldn't force a person. Well, first of all, only if he had enough money could he do it. But even if he did have the money, if he was not willing to do it, you couldn't force him. Now, it wasn't the most honorable thing to say no, and it was relatively disgraceful to say, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to help out. I can, but I won't. But no one could force you. No one could force you. So she's wondering, well, I think he has the money to help us and redeem certain things, but I don't know if he wants to do it, but her mind is working now. Her mind is working as soon as she has heard of Boaz. She's like, I wonder. Verse 21, Ruth, the Moabite, has said, he also said to me, you shall stay close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young men, with his young women, and that people do not meet you in any other field. So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Now, some time passes, chapter 3, verse 1, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Shall I not seek security for you? I need to find someone to take care of you. Basically, she's saying, I think I need to find your husband. All right? Someone to take care of you. All right? So I have a plan. Here's her plan. Okay, verse 2. Now Boaz... She has the plan already, all right? Now, Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. All right, so our eligible bachelor is Boaz. That's our guy. And I know where he's going to be tonight. So she has a plan. Verse 3. Here's what you got to do. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself. Put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down. And he will tell you what you should do. I'm like, Naomi, this does not sound like the best plan in the world. This sounds kind of shady. This does not seem like straightforward things that you should be doing. But Ruth says, all right, that's what you want me to do, I'll do it. All right, verse 5. And she said to her, all that you say to me, I will do it. All right, verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now, let me quickly point out, even though this scene, all these words, uncovering something and lying down with them, even though this scene has a lot of sexual ideas to it, nothing happened. Nothing happened. He doesn't touch her. All right? What does happen? Verse 8. Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, who are you? Good question. So she answered, I am Ruth, your maidservant. Now, up until this point right here, she has done everything that Naomi has told her to do. She's gone, she's uncovered him, she's lying at his feet. Now, what she's supposed to do, according to Naomi, is sit there and wait for him to tell her what to do. But she keeps on talking. This, she's gone beyond the plan now. And what does she say? Listen to this. Middle of verse 9. She's like, I'm Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative. Take me under your wing for protection, for you are a kinsman redeemer. Where did we hear this phrase of taking someone under their wing? We just read that in chapter 2. When Boaz met her, he said, I hope that the Lord will take care of you under whose wing you have come for refuge. And she's basically taking the same language that he used for his prayer and blessing, and she's turning this around and she's saying, that which you prayed for me, that which you hoped for me, will you be the answer to that prayer? Basically, she's saying, I want you to take care of me. You are my close relative. You're my kinsman redeemer. Basically, will you marry me? That's what she is asking him to do. Now, I'm sorry. We have this poor, young Moabite girl, and she's going to this rich, older Israelite man and asking him to marry her. I mean, this is going against all the rules now. We're just breaking all the rules now. I mean, he could say, what are you talking about, crazy person? Get out of here. Never come back. We don't know what he's going to do. But, verse 10, then he said, blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. It almost seems as though Boaz is amazed that she would be interested in him. You're not going after younger men, but you want me? All right. Verse 11, and now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request. For all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. So he says, yes, let's do it. You want me to be your kinsman redeemer? You want me to marry you, take care of you? Let's do it. All right. So you're at this point, you're reading the story for the first time. This is great. Wedding bells, everything is good. But then in verse 12, he throws this out. Verse 12, he says, now it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. And you're like, what? Come on. You just, oh, okay. Verse 13, stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. All right, we got to deal with this. There's a guy who is a closer relative. He should be first in line to do these things. I got to go talk to him. So either way, Ruth is getting married. She's getting married, but she doesn't know who. To whom? It's either going to be Boaz or this other guy that she hasn't met yet. All right, so we got to wait until morning to find out. Verse 14, so she lay at his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. In other words, you know, you coming here, let's just kind of keep that to ourselves. You don't have to tell everyone about that. Verse 15, also he said, bring the shawl that is on you and hold it. And when she held it, he measured six. The word ephahs there is in italics, so it's not. It doesn't actually say ephahs. Most translations say six measures of barley, which is probably better, because six ephahs would be 90 kilos. So I don't think she's carrying 90 kilos off in her shawl. Right? Probably six measures, he probably did like that six times. Right? And so he gives her a bunch of food and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, is that you, my daughter? Then she told her all that the man had done for her. You know, Naomi has been probably waiting all night to see what's going to happen. So she finally shows up. Verse 17, and Ruth said, these six measures of barley he gave me, for he said to me, do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. Then she said, sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day. So she's like, this is a stand-up guy. He will deal with this today. All we have to do is wait and see what's going to happen. He'll deal with it. Chapter 4, verse 1. Now, Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, come aside, friend. Sit down here. So he came aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. So they sat down. So he finds the man and he calls a bunch of elders basically to be witnesses because he wants to have some official agreement here. And now I want you to notice what Boaz is going to do here. He is so slick in what he's going to do here. Just listen. Verse 3. Then he said to the close relative, Naomi, I thought we were here for Ruth. Never mind, he doesn't even mention Ruth yet. Okay. Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. And you're like, what? What does this have to do with it? I didn't even know about this. This is the first time that this land is mentioned. I don't know when she sold this land. Maybe, for all I know, maybe Elimelech and she and her sold it when they moved to Moab or something. I don't know, but apparently they had some land that they sold. Okay. What am I supposed to do about that? Verse 4, and I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I might know. For there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you. And he said, I'll redeem it. Sure. I mean, if you're in the position of this other guy, who we don't know his name, if you're in the position of this other guy, he's just been told there's this widow, no kids, no nothing, and she has this land that needs to be redeemed. Will you buy it? And he says, sure. Yeah, I'll buy it. I mean, what is he going to do? If he buys it, he can, you know, he can use it for, you know, for fields or whatever. He can rent it. He can do whatever he wants with it. It's his. Fine, you'd have to take care of Naomi, an old woman, for a little while. But then after that, once she dies, it's his. He can give it to his kids. He can, you know, it's his. All right, so he says, yeah, I'll buy it. Sure, no problem. And Boaz says, oh, but there's something else also as the close relative, as the kinsman redeemer that you got to do. It's not just the land, actually. Verse 5. He says, then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. Oh, wait a minute. How do you perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance? You have to marry Ruth in order to have an heir so that he can inherit the land. So basically, he went from, oh, I'm getting a piece of land that's going to be mine in a few years, to, oh, I have to buy a piece of land, take care of Naomi, take care of Ruth, marry Ruth, have an heir for Ruth, and then he gets the land. And he's like, no, this is not what I was planning. This is not what I was expecting. So, verse 6, and the close relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. So this is too complicated. I can't do it. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. Okay. Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything. One man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel. Therefore the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal, and Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. So I'm buying all the property. Moreover, verse 10, moreover, Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day. And all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel. And may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman. So the elders say, okay, they bless the marriage. They say, may it be fruitful like Rachel and Leah, the mothers of the patriarchs, wives of Jacob. May you be like Tamar and Perez and Judah. We don't have to get into that story right now. You can go to Genesis and read about that. It's a bit of a mess, but a bunch of kids came out of that. So verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel, and may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him. So here you have a woman, Naomi, who wanted to be called Mara, saying that she had left full and came back with nothing. And now she has a family, she has a grandchild, she has someone to provide for her. Verse 16 says, then Naomi, this is a bad translation, then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him. It sounds like she's nursing him, breastfeeding him. She's not. She's just a nanny and she's taking care of him. Verse 17, also the neighbor women gave him a name saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. Now, stop right there. At this point, you think the story's over. You think that's the ending of a wonderful love story between Ruth and Boaz. It's a beautiful story of redemption, a beautiful story of restoration. You had a story that began with three funerals and it ends with a wedding and a baby. It's wonderful. But then as soon as the author mentions this child that is born, whose name is Obed, he says at the end of verse 17, Obed is the father of Jesse, the father of David. And you're like, whoa, if you're reading this for the first time, you're like, I didn't see that coming. What's that got to do with anything? And just to make sure that we're not confused about this, that he did indeed say that Ruth is King David's great-grandmother, just to make sure, he gives us a 10-generation genealogy at the end of the book. Look at verse 18. Now this is the genealogy of Perez, because Perez is the son of Judah, okay, the son of Jacob. Perez begot Hezron. Hezron begot Ram, and Ram begot Aminadab. Aminadab begot Nashon, and Nashon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz, and Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. And it's in this point that you realize that this is not just a love story between two nice people, but it's something much bigger than that. This is a story that's part of a much bigger story. Really quick, before we're done, can you turn with me to Matthew chapter 1? Here we find another genealogy. I want you to go to verse 3. Matthew 1, verse 3. It said, Judah begot Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Aminadab. Aminadab begot Nashon, and Nashon begot Salmon. So these are the same names that we just read in Ruth. Verse 5, Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. Boaz begot Obed by Ruth. Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David the king. That's where the author of Ruth stops. But Matthew keeps going. So you got more names and more names and more names. Go down to verse 15. Eliud begot Eleazar, and Eleazar begot Mathan. Mathan begot Jacob, and Jacob begot Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. So you're like, okay, so Ruth isn't just a nice love story. It's a story about what God does in history in order to bring the Messiah. It's about how God controls all of history to bring about, to fulfill the promises that He has made. When you read Old Testament stories, they're not there just to entertain you, even though they may be entertaining at times. But they're there to point and lead to Christ. Why is it? Here's a question. Why is it that in the Old Testament, God gave these laws concerning kinsmen redeemers? Was it just so that He could take care of some widows in ancient Israel? Or are all these things pointing towards the greatest redeemer, which is Christ? Remember, what are some of the elements that are required, that are needed for someone to be a kinsman redeemer? Number one, he had to be related to you. And Scripture teaches that the Son of God, who was equal with God the Father, but did not consider that equality something to be held onto, but emptied Himself, and He came down and took on flesh, and He became like us. Hebrews said He is our brother, and He calls us brethren. The reason that Jesus had to become a man is so that He could be like us, related to us. There's a reason that bulls and goats can't take away sin. We needed someone like us to redeem us. So Jesus comes and becomes our relative. And in order to be a kinsman redeemer, you don't just have to be a close relative, but you have to have the resources and the ability to redeem. Did Jesus have the ability and the resources to redeem us? Well, He is Lord of heaven and earth. And everything is His. And 1 Peter chapter 1, we are told that we have not been redeemed with perishable things like silver and gold, but we have been redeemed by the precious blood of Christ. He had something that He could redeem us with. And in order to be a kinsman redeemer, it's not just that you had to be a close relative and be able to redeem, but you had to be willing to redeem. Was Jesus willing to redeem? Well, Hebrews says that He was so willing to do it that He endured the cross and despised the shame. In John chapter 10, Jesus said, "No one takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own accord. I am planning on doing this, and I am going to do it." We are all sinners, and we cannot pay the debt that we have because of our sin. And Jesus is able and willing to redeem all those who trust in Him. Amen. Let's pray.